Good morning, everybody. It is September 29th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom, my home and yours away from homeroom. I am here. I am an exiled teacher this year, folks, and I am delighted to be able to do this podcast and every morning get together with you. We have a good one today. It seems the last two episodes I did on the modernist turn in art have been popular. And so I thought today I would share with you another series, another podcast on the subject of art. This is a topic that has, like the modernist turn in art, been on my mind for years and a very near and dear topic to my heart, I suppose you could say. So, as the leaves begin to fall here in the Adirondacks, we're getting that color creeping down the mountain, that brown and that yellow and that red and that burnished bronze color coming down all the mountains, taking away all our green. Soon our trees will be bare. Let's take the day here. Let's take this podcast and discuss an important idea. And I will say, I'm still going to get back to that series on what kids are learning in American high school these days. We haven't covered social studies or history or economics or psychology, ethics, morals. Haven't covered any of those yet. And we talked about English, but not necessarily specifically literature. So those are kind of important. But as I said, the last 2 days seem to have been pretty popular topics, so let's continue investigating some art and some ideas in art. By the way, art history would be completely absent from the American high school curriculum these days. So, let's talk about the Stan Lee Revolution and Marvel Comics. This could be a very deep subject, but we're going to focus on the biggest distinguishing feature, the most important distinguishing feature of the Stan Lee Revolution today. Now, let's consider. It's pretty easy, I think, to answer this question. Who are the top two underrated literary figures of the 20th century? I think it's easy. Do you think it is easy to answer that question? I am not sure. Clearly, Stan Lee is one of them, right? You may have guessed that by the context, the title of this podcast. The other, of course, is, I won't leave you guessing, but we won't address him in today's podcast, E. Gary Gygax, the creator of Dungeons & Dragons. And now, before you go guffawing off into your morning coffee, notice I did say underrated. I'm not stating absolutely some absolute judgment on what tier of writer Gygax is in, although I do think it's higher than probably most people think. But I'm simply stating that compared to how the world views Gygax and how they ought to value him, Gygax has a gap that is, along with Stan Lee, bigger than any other 20th century figure. Someday we will get to Gygax, but today, Stan Lee. How do we even know that there was a Stan Lee Revolution? How do we know that he did do something different? Well, look at the trajectory of Marvel. Like Heinlein and Clark and Asimov and Bradbury and then even Le Guin, or in some sense especially Le Guin, like they brought science fiction out of the ghetto in the 20th century in literature, Stan Lee did the same for superheroes, except hardly anyone noticed until the Marvel Cinematic Universe came along, of course. People noticed Heinlein, people noticed Clark and all these other guys that I just mentioned. And of course, Le Guin into the 60s, 70s, 80s became a staple, not just of the mass market, but also of the academic market, which is very interesting and a rare achievement. But Stan Lee never was accepted in the academic market, except perhaps very recently. He's finally getting a little bit of his due, but he had tremendous achievements in the mass market, right? What he did was he started with this little family connection. I think it was his cousin's husband or something. And he started working in a tiny division of a publishing house, Timely Publications, and he eventually grew that into Marvel Comics. So he took this tiny division of a publishing house, not an especially forceful or powerful publishing house either, but he brought Marvel Comics out of that, and eventually Marvel Comics became the dominant force in its market. Made more money than anyone thought comic books ever would, and participated greatly in this geek revolution that we've had in the 20th century and 21st century, closely related to the feminizing revolution, the feminizing of the Western world. And it has become, Stan Lee started these characters and this revolution that has become now the biggest movie franchise of the current century. By how much? Well, yes, it's even bigger than Harry Potter and Star Wars. Do you want to guess the total sales of the Marvel Cinematic Universe franchise? $23 billion compared to about $10 billion each for Harry Potter and Star Wars. So $23 billion to $10 billion, that is more than double. That is what Stan Lee did. And finally, he's getting a little bit of academic attention, but you know, really, he remains extremely underrated. And it's interesting to note, too, that perhaps this was related to the medium, I should say, right? These works that Stan Lee was producing were not novels. They were not just prose. They had pictures, and maybe that led a little bit to the disdain that they were greeted with in certain circles. And it's also an interesting question still these days. We should do a podcast on this one. Why aren't superhero novels a genre the same way that science fiction novels and fantasy novels are a genre? So yeah, someday we'll get to a podcast in and of itself. But so Stan Lee accomplished great things. How did he do it? This is the nitty and the gritty right here. The biggest piece of the Stan Lee revolution was his characters. This is no surprise if you have studied his work, or even if you have just read it and appreciated his work, right? You have several components to a comic book. This is a compound art form, right? And in some cases, that's more advanced than just the novel, right? The 20th century really saw compound art forms, where many, many, many people had to work together, really rise to prominence, right? Movies, many people have to work together on that. That's a compound art form. And computer games, many people have to work together. That's a compound art form. And comic books are another one, right? You have to combine the art. And so there are many pieces to the art. And then you have to combine that with the story. And there are many pieces to the story. There's the plot, there's the character, there's the setting, there is the theme. And what I am telling you is that, similarly to Stephen King, but even more so really for Stan Lee, the strength and the heart of his revolution was his characters. And specifically, you can find one little kernel here. What Stan Lee specifically did with his characters that was so different, so revolutionary, is that he turned, I do mean revolt, right? And turn about face. We're big into revolts, I guess, the last 3 days in art here. Those are the most interesting parts of art sometimes, to see where it goes, how it turns. And what Stan Lee did is he turned from the Greek archetype for his heroes to a Christian one. What does that mean? Well, I will tell you. First, consider the Greek archetype. the Greek hero. Superhuman abilities for sure, right? Hercules had amazing strength. Achilles had that invulnerability thing going on, almost invulnerable, right? Kevin Durant would beg to differ, to point out that it wasn't a complete invulnerability. Sorry, KD. Often the Greek hero was descended from the gods. Achilles' mom, right, was that sea nymph. And Hercules' dad was Zeus himself. And for the Greek hero, their only competition was really the gods and themselves, because they were part gods, so they were in that category. Their competition was the gods and their own sins, maybe too much pride, hubris, right? Or a misunderstanding of honor. These were really their only competition. Odysseus would have made it home in no time if it weren't for the gods cursing him. Achilles could have made the Trojan War a heck of a lot easier if he wasn't all mopey about his honor and his status. So those are some traits of the Greek hero. The biggest trait that we are going to focus on here is that the Greek hero's superhuman abilities, his transcendental powers, were always a source of good, a source of power, a source of effectiveness and of joy, something that heroes could exult in and revel in often. You know, Hercules was not tortured because he was strong. Odysseus did not experience his trials and feel his deep and existential pain because he was clever. It was because, you know, he pissed off some of the gods. And Achilles wasn't moping because he was invulnerable. He was moping because of something external to himself, a slight done to him by Agamemnon. Now, keep that in mind. Keep those traits of the Greek hero in mind. And now consider the Christian hero. Of course, the ultimate Christian hero is Christ. And look at his powers. His powers are the source of his pain. It's not the cause of his pain is not something external to him. It is his nature as a superhuman, as a divine being. He feels pain. He has this terrible crisis, this passion, because he is descended from God and can work miracles and has powers. The Romans didn't crucify Christ, right, because he forgot to sacrifice to Artemis in order to sail his ships or something, or because he was butthurt over his honor, or because he was, you know, too chock full of hubris. The Romans crucified him because his superpowers were a threat to the empire. They crucified him because he was becoming a king of men, and he was becoming a king of men because he could save men. He had the miraculous power to endow people with eternal life. He could work fishes and a couple fishes and a couple loaves into the ability to feed the multitudes. He could raise Lazarus from the dead. He had these powers, and because of that, he had to be stopped. He was nailed to the cross. He suffers indescribably. This is very different from the Greek hero, right? Where the source of their pain, the source of their suffering was external to them, was not their powers in and of themselves. The Christian hero suffers because he has power. And the same idea, you know, it's not just for Christ, this idea that the origin of their pain, the cause of their sacrifice is the power themselves, their faith. Their faith is what causes them to be persecuted, and their faith is also the source of their powers. It applies to countless other Christian heroes too, right? Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego leap to mind. The faith is their power, and the faith is what causes them to be persecuted. This is quite different from the Greek model, where their powers were their powers, and they were awesome, they were great, but their downfall didn't come from their powers, their pain didn't come, their suffering didn't come from their powers, it came from something external. So you've got these two different ideas, the Christian hero and the Greek hero. Now, let's consider these archetypes as applied to comic books, right? We could consider them for a lot of other things too, but we're talking about the Stan Lee Revolution and how it was so important here. So let's look at comic books in the early days. Superman. He was around before Marvel Comics and before the Stan Lee Revolution in the early 1960s. Superman's been around for decades before that. And Superman fits into the Greek mold, right? He can only really be stopped by other gods. If you look at what can stop him, kryptonite, it came down from the heavens. It was a piece of his own origin story. It came down from the heavens. It's in this other realm, and it is a rock external to him. It doesn't have anything to do with his psyche. It doesn't have anything to do with how he's dealing with his powers. His powers are always good. He doesn't go around lamenting the fact that he is Superman and this is these powers are a burden on him. And now later, of course, that did happen, right? But that's because DC copied the Stan Lee Revolution. They copied this. We're talking about the early days when Superman was first there. He did not suffer because he was Superman. The fantasy was that you could identify with Superman, you'd have all these powers, and you would be free from pain. The powers would help you conquer that pain, that suffering. This was the Greek model for a hero. Now, look what Stan Lee did with Spider-Man starting a couple decades later, early 1960s. With Spider-Man, the powers are the source of his problem. Look at the amazing origin story, right? In this origin story, Peter Parker gets these powers and he says, oh, well, maybe I could use them for money to gain some lucre. They could be lucrative. I will try to wrestle. And then he sees this man escaping and he could stop him easily because he's Spider-Man now. He has the power to stop that guy. He could stop him easily. He doesn't. And then this guy goes on to kill Peter Parker's uncle, good old Uncle Ben, who was really his dad. He was raised by him. And therefore, Peter Parker ends up feeling extremely guilty. He can't deal, in some respects, with the pain that he's feeling now because this man killed his uncle and Peter Parker had the power to stop him, but he didn't. If Peter didn't have that power, would he feel this deep pain, this angst? Would he go through this psychological torture? No. No, because he was just a little science geek. He had no ability to stop this guy. The reason Peter is feeling this pain is because he is Spider-Man, because he has this terrible burden now, this responsibility. Of course, the great line, with great power comes great responsibility. The power burdens him with responsibility. This is a burden. The power isn't just this amazing, awesome thing that you can have. Woohoo, I'm Superman now. I can go around and punch through walls. No, the Stan Lee Revolution is that the power is not just cool, but it is a huge source of pain and problems. Peter Parker would not be torn in his relationship with MJ, constantly needing to lie to her if he were not Spider-Man. That pain wouldn't be there. He could be a much better photographer for Triple J. He wouldn't get screamed at by Triple J for missing assignments all the time because he had to go off and be Spider-Man. He wouldn't have the psychological burden of lying to dear old Aunt May all the time because he is Spider-Man. But it's precisely because he has these powers that he's constantly tortured, constantly feeling this burden that he has to live up to things. And that's the Stan Lee Revolution. And it's not just Spider-Man, right? Hulk. Look at Hulk. Perhaps Hulk makes this even more concretely obvious. Bruce Banner is tortured by the fact that he can turn into Hulk, that Hulk will take away his mind, and he will have all these awesome powers, but he, in some sense, loses some humanity. And then, of course, great, great, great literary twist, finds out that sometimes he even gains more humanity that way. And what does that mean about how he exists in his normal life as Bruce Banner that sort of pain would have been avoided. He would never be experiencing that if he weren't the Hulk. It's an internal source, the pain for these characters. These X-Men, they're ostracized. They are hunted precisely because they have powers. And it's not just the heavens. It's not just the other superheroes, right? In the X-Men story, the senators and the government, they are as big a foe as anyone else. And Magneto, the evil god sort of in that myth there, he comes off even better than the senators and the government in a lot of cases. So the X-Men are ostracized and hunted because of that. Doctor Strange, he can't have meaningful relationships in this universe because his powers are constantly throwing him across multiple universes, right? And he has to try to get a relationship with Clea. Clea's from another universe entirely, the Dark Dimension. And his powers end up causing him all kinds of pain. They make happiness a very, very elusive state. Happiness is very, very hard for Doctor Strange to get, precisely because he's the Sorcerer Supreme, and that is a serious burden. And that's where Stan Lee turned from the Greek archetype. The Greek model, as I said, the hero's powers are unquestioned, unadulterated, undiluted good. His problems come from elsewhere, honor, pride, other gods. And Stan Lee turned and switched that to a Christian archetype. The hero's powers are in and of themselves painful and necessitate very difficult sacrifices. So then you look at Stan Lee's revolution and its legacy. It's almost impossible to overstate, almost beyond our ability to state how influential Stan Lee's revolution has been. Buffy, of course, is the perfect example. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Her angst, it's deeper than the Hellmouth. This is not just some little angst. It's deeper, and it's all because she is the Slayer. If she did not have superpowers, she wouldn't have these problems. Nothing soul-wrenching, family-threatening that she has put through. And every Slayer is like that in the Buffy universe. Before Buffy, all the Slayers had to die sooner or later simply because they were Slayers. They died super young. It's a superpowered life. It's painful. It's doomed. You know, you can talk about Hellboy. You can talk about Katniss, Edward Cullen, Thomas Covenant, even Harry Potter, to bring it back to Spider-Man, right? Harry Potter breaks up with Ginny exactly the way Spider-Man has to deal with MJ sometimes. He breaks up with her to protect her from Voldemort. And this is like Spider-Man having to protect MJ, so Spider-Man goes through all this pain and torture of maintaining a secret identity. You know, if Harry had not been the boy who lived, if he had not had the power to defeat Voldemort, he wouldn't have had to, in that particular scene, break up with Ginny. So his power is the source of his pain. Well, the final idea I will leave you with is an incomplete one, because we're going to have to tackle it in another podcast at another time. But the final idea is, what does this all say about society? What does it mean that our biggest heroes have shifted from the Christian myth, the Christian model, over to the Greek model? I think it does have some important consequences, or it does say some important things about Western society these days, and it ties into the two other revolutions that I mentioned earlier, right? The geek revolution, geeks have taken over the earth, and the feminine revolution, right? The feminization of Western society that has unquestionably been going on over the last 30 years. Just again, look at how the hero went from Peter Parker to Buffy Summers. But all that, my friends and droogs, that is going to have to wait for another podcast. So enjoy your day. Tomorrow we will be turning back and we will be looking. We are going to get back to the series on what high schoolers are learning, and we do need to get back to what high schoolers are learning, especially in those fields that I talked to you about before, art history, obviously, but history and economics, those are extremely important gaps And it's important to understand what's going on with those in American high school these days. But tomorrow we're going to have to talk about the vaccine mandates and the mask mandates, and specifically the moral origins and the morality that supports the mask mandates and the type of morals that do not support the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates that are threatening to overtake our society. We're not Australia yet here in the United States, but it's not looking good out there, folks. So that's what we'll talk about tomorrow. See you then. Take care.